If a girl wore a thong to promote potato chips, would you eat them out of principle, Big Mac? Or does it matter who the girl is?
Would I eat them out of principle?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fair question.
That's not a fair question?
No, it's not that it's unfair. I got to be honest, and I apologize.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure what you mean by would I eat it out of principle.
Out of principle. Like I appreciate you wearing a bikini to promote the potato chips.
So I'll eat it.
So out of principle, I'm going to try the potato chips because you were willing to wear a bikini to promote them.
I think so.
What if that woman was Heidi Klum?
Then certainly. Yeah.
Did you know that Heidi Klum owns a pizza place here in New York City called Crazy Pizza?
I didn't know that.
And they walk around like swinging the dough above their heads. It's like more of a show than anything. I don't know if the pizza's any good, but Heidi Klum has a pizza place.
Wacky Crazy Pizza.
She also has a potato chip brand now.
What is it called?
And she got, I don't know. But she wore a bikini to promote it.
I hope it's different than Gwyneth Paltrow's candles.
Me too. Yeah.
I'll pass on goop. I'm not interested in.
There's a lot of people that would get in line for those chips.
I'm sure they would.
Yeah, Heidi Klum. Gwyneth Paltrow has a candle.
Yes.
And maybe a body soap, too.
Something, I don't know. A whole line of products.
That smells like her sexual essence.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way to put it?
Because
I can't say what it is. Mm-hmm. Right? It's undefeated, they say.
Mm-hmm.
So Heidi Klum came out with a potato chip brand and promoted it, I guess, by eating the chips in a bikini. But here's the problem with that. I don't know the name of the potato chips.
I
get lost in the bikini thing.
I can see that.
And I got this other weird thing. And it's weird because I'm a dad and I'm a girl dad. Heidi Klum does have a daughter. Are you familiar with this?
I mean, I guess I'm familiar she has a daughter.
Are you, though?
Yeah.
Here's what's weird.
What's her name? I'm not as up to date on
you're not?
The attractive celebrities as much as you and apparently Hoff are. No.
Hoff, you know about Heidi Klum's daughter? I got to make sure I'm talking about the right gal here. Before I say something, gets me in trouble. It might not be her. It might be a different girl. One of these models has a daughter.
Lena.
I don't know. Is that her, though? Which one of the former models has a daughter in her 20s who's like clearly a model as well?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if it's Heidi's daughter. In any event, let's just double check that before Big Mac says something gets him in trouble.
Why would I say something gets me in
trouble? Because you frequently do, and I got a cover for you.
I didn't say anything wrong.
Yeah, you did. You said to the guys from Mustang Harry's that you would come to their place and do despicable things to their wings. Like, I got a cover for you on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should I have not said that?
You shouldn't have said I'd smack it up, flip it, rub it down. That was weird to say about chicken.
I got to be honest. I got to plead ignorance on this one. That's not what you say about wings.
I mean, I'm with you.
I thought that's what it was.
We're gonna mistreat those wings. I can tell you that. I'm being told that my main man, who is a dear friend of mine, who allowed my kids to treat him like a playground set one day and climb all over him.
Really?
Which was really wrong of my kids to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also my favorite baseball player of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, number one, Mr. Mookie Wilson. Mook, it's Craig and Big Mac. How you been, buddy?
Craig, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. What's going on?
Thank you for coming on, Mookie.
I miss you so much, Mookie Wilson. You know that? I do.
It's been a while. I've spoken to you in a while.
The last time you and I were together in person, outside of a rare radio thing, I think I had four kids under 10, and they called you Uncle Mookie.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of nieces and nephews, so don't worry about it. We're all good.
Well, always a pleasure to talk to you. You know, it's kind of sneaking up on us in a weird way because the Mets are having such a tough season.
Yeah.
But this was supposed to be the celebration, the 40th anniversary of the 1986 World Series championship, and happy to have Mookie here to talk a little bit about it. Obviously, Mook, it's got to be tough when people want to see you guys and Strawberry and Doc and Wally and Lenny and Timmy and all the guys, but under the auspice of, man, this Met team is making it hard for me to want to go to the ballpark. What's the experience been like for you thus far this year?
It's been just same as for all the fans. No, we're fans now. No, we follow the Mets religiously. I mean, you know, I do. I mean, I'm in South Carolina, but, mm-hmm. you know, thank God for, you know, cable TV. We can catch all the games. But it's been tough, I mean, because coming to the year, we had great expectations. And I think when the expectations are not met and falling really, really short, you look for explanations. And right now, I don't see the explanations. I feel management can't figure it out either. You know, it's just one of those years you just have to grin and bear it, man, and to work itself out.
All right, I want to do something special for the audience with you, Mook, all right? And obviously you've talked about Game 6 a million times over, but I don't know if I've ever heard you in your own words walk people through the step-by-step. So you're in the dugout. It looks like it's a wrap. The Red Sox are going to win the World Series. Gary Carter gets up. Easy line drive single. Take me from there.
Yeah.
And as best you can, we'll go step-by-step here. How you experienced that amazing, the greatest inning of baseball in New York Met history. Start with the Carter single. What are you doing?
Okay, first of all, you do remember how old I am, right?
Yes. Yes.
It was 40, and we're celebrating the 40th anniversary, Craig.
You know the first thing to go is the memory. Okay, all right. But we'll go through it, all right? You know, and I'm quite sure every Met fan probably remembers this better than I do. But anyway. Beginning of the inning, we're down, and I wasn't feeling too bad because at the time we had probably our best two guys leading off the inning, which were Keith Hernandez and Wally Backman. So I figured we were in pretty good shape in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But when Keith made the out, or Wally made the out, then Keith made the out, things didn't look good. I'm sitting in the dugout, and I'm saying to myself, I dare not tell Davey and Mel this. I'm sitting right beside him, and I'm saying, man, we about to blow this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my first thought. Then Kid gets up, Kid gets two strikes. All right, got two strikes, and he gets a hit. Okay, big deal. We got one hit. We need more than one hit right about now. And so he gets a hit, and from there, we have got to find Mitch,
Kevin Mitchell comes up, right?
We had to find Mitch.
Yep.
But anyway, Mitch goes up and he gets two strikes. Okay. I'm looking for it to just, for the fans to just go crazy now. And then Mitch gets a hit. I go, oh, wow. Okay. Two guys, two strikes, two hits. You know, I'm still not feeling overly excited about anybody else that tell you anything different. It may not be telling you the complete truth. Okay, I'm saying the exact truth. Okay, no, okay. So I'm thinking, okay, we got two guys on, we still down 2 runs. That's not going to help us at all. You know, then Ray gets up. Ray gets two strikes on him. Now I'm on deck, and I didn't think I was going to get that point, but now I got to kind of reevaluate everything and kind of get myself in the mode just in case. So Ray gets up, he gets two strikes, and he gets a hit, you know, and then here comes Kid, and he's, you know how Kid was. He's the biggest child in that whole dugout. He's, you know, just yakking and clapping and stuff. I'm saying, does he still know we still down a run? You know, you know. But anyway, then Ray gets the strikes, and he gets a hit, and they're going to score. Okay, all right, something about that. Now, I'm the same guy that I was sitting in the bench saying we're about to blow this thing. Now, all of a sudden, I got to change my whole attitude. Okay, All right, I'm up now. And I tell you, I didn't know there were 60,000 people in the ballpark.
Really?
I was just me and the pitcher.
So you're saying the entire ballpark goes quiet for you? You're that focused?
I didn't hear a thing.
Wow.
I didn't hear a thing. I don't know if it's out of fear or what, but I didn't hear nothing.
Now, what's going on?
If I had been that focused my entire career, I might be in the Hall of Fame right about now.
Talking to the great Mookie Wilson. So you get up there. You fouled off like 8 pitches in that at bat. Is there, like, I always wondered, do you remember thinking, okay, that was an off-speed pitch. He's probably coming with a fastball now. Like, what's going through your mind before the wild pitch?
First of all, you're giving me too much credit for thinking about what pitches were. Okay, all right, let's get that straight. All right. You see it, you swing at it. That's my theory. That's my philosophy. Now, I never changed. All right, I wasn't counting pitches or anything of that nature. Right, but I'm so focused, and if he just throwing that ball 12 inches outside, I probably swung at it. I really would have. I'm just locked in. I wasn't no pre-planning or anything of that nature, man. There's no time to get cute. It's time to go up there and do what you do, which was swing the bat. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for better or for worse, which was a lot of worse in my case, but that's what I was up there to do. One thing I did know, I wasn't putting it in the hands of the umpire. That much I can tell you.
Right. You were going to swing the bat.
You were going to swing.
Even if you miss, you were a free swinger anyhow, so you're going to swing the bat.
Oh, yes.
So as the wild pitch is coming towards you and obviously goes to the backstop, can you tell right off the release that pitch is not going to be a strike and it might be a wild pitch, or did you not see it at that moment?
No, at that point, there again, I'm so focused. Now, I will tell you this. I was kind of looking outside because I knew Bob Stanley. I faced him before. We faced Bob Stanley before. And I was looking for a pitch to be outside, a sinker away to get me to roll over. This is what I was looking for in that particular situation. When the ball came inside, I panicked. I really did. And people, if you look at it, if I don't move, I don't think that ball hits me. But I was still looking away,
right.
And when I saw it coming inside, I freaked out. And I jumped out of instinct. I just jumped because I didn't know where the ball was coming or not. So I jumped out of the way.
Right.
So I think it must have surprised the catcher, too, because it's still debatable whether it was a wild pitch or fastball.
Okay, fair enough.
Don't go there.
And then
after that. All right, listen. Okay.
After that, obviously the at-bat changes. I know you said your approach was C-ball, hit-ball, but you went from needing a base hit to continue and not go home a loser to now the game is tied, runner at second. Does the approach change? Do you have a sense of relief? What's the sense now that the game is tied as opposed to...
Once the wild pitch came, I felt 15 pounds lighter.
Yeah, I'm sure.
pressure's off.
Yep.
I'm playing with house money now. I can only win the ball game. I can't lose it. Mm-hmm. I can only win the ball game. Now, you know in New York, if I'm missing out and I run no score, I lost the ball game.
That's right.
That's it.
That part was gone.
You're
all right.
No blame.
I was playing with house money, and now it's just a matter of, hey, do what you do. I felt a lot better swinging the bat, a lot looser. Maybe that's why all the pitches and stuff, but there was nothing. Anybody want to tell you anything different? So why are we on that subject? Let me tell everybody, you know how you dream all the time that you'll be in a situation that you'll be the guy to win, you're going to win the ball game, you're going to be the hero, and everybody wants to be in that spot?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lie. You don't want to be in that spot. That's the spot you want to be in. don't let anybody tell you that story.
Everybody
wants to be in that spot.
You'd rather be at second base. You'd rather be the runner on second base.
I can think of four other guys I'd rather see at that plate at that point than me.
Yeah.
I can see that right now.
Talk to the great Mookie Wilson.
Right now.
So, Mook, when you hit the dribbler down the first base side, I've always said, many Met fans have, obviously, that even if Buckner fields the ball, I think there's a good shot you get to the base first and beat it out. Now, whether or not Knight scores, that's another thing.
Yeah.
He probably stops at third base because it's an infield ground ball.
Right.
But when you've gone back and watched the video a million times and thought about it, do you think you're going to beat out Buckner getting to the bag if he does catch the ball?
It's interesting because, believe it or not, Bill Buckner and I, we had this very same conversation on many occasions. Matter of fact, we sat down and watched the whole game together.
Mm-hmm.
And just went through game by end. In that particular play, we talked about it. Now, when the ball was hit, my only focus there was beating him. I thought I had the pitcher beat. The pitcher was a little late.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Stanley was a little late, so I thought I had him beat. So this was right between me and Billy. I didn't know how far back he was until I saw the replay. And he and I both, we sat down and we looked at it. He said, even if I catch the ball, this has come from Bill himself.
Mm-hmm.
He said, even if I catch that ball, I don't think I'm going to beat you to the bag.
Right.
And I have to agree with him. I don't think he would have beaten me to the bag either, because looking on video, I can see exactly his distance and how he's moving, the direction. He's moving sideways now. He's not coming toward the bat.
Right. Yeah. And he had a bad wheel,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's
right,
not the famously.
And he had a bad wheel, and I had two fresh tires. That was good.
Mook, let me ask you this real quick, and may he rest in peace. Yeah. Bill Buckner has since passed on. You know, he spent a good decade plus, you know, kind of as a recluse, being really pissed about, you know, the fact that a great career, which he was a great baseball player, you know, unfortunately for him, got broken down to one play, and it's an error on him that cost the Red Sox the World Series, is the way a lot of people view it. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, he decided to embrace it. And you guys did autograph signings, and he was willing to sign, you know, the still photograph of that moment where the ball goes between his legs. And you guys forged, as I understand it, a pretty good friendship. And I wonder, did he ever talk to you about, you know, how depressed he was and the emotional ruin that he experienced after his entire career being brought down to that one individual play in 86? Or did he not like to discuss that?
Well, it's good because we did talk about it. Bill and I, we had a lot of discussions. And I think that's the one reason why we really got along so well, because he was very candid with me with a lot of discussions, a lot of things that happened with him, with the club, after that whole play. But after we talked, and after 86, I didn't talk with Bill until about 3 years later. I got traded to Toronto, and he went to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And we were in Kansas City, and that's the first time I spoke to Bill since 86. That was in 89. And I was laying on the ground, I know, doing my pregame stretch and stuff, and he was walking across the ballpark, and I didn't want to talk to him because I had heard all the stuff that he had gone through. And somehow or another, I ended up on the line stretching, and he came over to me with a bat in his hand. Now, you can imagine what goes through my mind. He walked over with a bat in his hand. Over island, but anyway, I'm laying on the ground doing my stretching, and he has a bat on his shoulder, and he looks at me, standing over me, and he said, "How you doing, Mook?" I said, "All right, Bill, what's going on, brother?" And he said, "Hey, you want to hit me some ground balls?" And from that day, we became the best of friends, and we talked on many occasions. He would call me in the middle of the night sometimes. We just talked. And when he spoke with me, he never talked about the issues in Boston and stuff. The only thing he said that really surprised me, he said that whole situation made him a better person.
Wow.
And I didn't understand it at the time. And he was telling me how it was a blessing that we were able to get together and talk. He said by him talking with me, it was the most therapeutic thing that could ever happen.
Wow.
And he said things happen for a reason. And I said, people don't know the side of Bill like I do.
Sure.
You know, and it was just, we became brothers. We became brothers over the years. I spent more time with him than I did my teammates. So it was just one of those amazing things. But as far as depressed, he never was really depressed. I'm not saying it didn't concern him about, he told me the story about why he really left Boston like he did, because some fans on the expressway, he was in a traffic jam, and some fans came to him and was saying something to his son.
Right. I think he moved to Idaho with his family to get away from that crap.
Yeah, he moved to Idaho, although he had the place in Idaho long before that.
Okay.
People don't know that.
Okay.
He had before that. You know, he didn't buy that place just to move there. He already had that home.
Got it.
And, you know, he said, but, you know, that's the only, but as far as him, he said it didn't bother him. He'd been through stuff like that before, but when it started affecting his family, that's when he decided, you know, it's time to just go ahead and move on.
Talking to the great Mookie Wilson. By the way, Mookie's got a cooking stand at Citi Field for all home games called Legacy Catering, and members of his family actually work the stand. So if you are going to go to Citi Field for any of these games coming up in August and September or the celebration of the 86 Mets, make sure you check out Legacy Catering and say hi to Mookie's family. Mookie and a bunch of the Mets obviously going to be in town sporadically throughout the last 2 months of the season as well. Quick question for you, just because I have you on.
Yeah.
Many people forget that in spring training, after the great 85, where you're arguably the best team in baseball, but there's no wild card, so you're sitting there on the outside looking in, and you guys come into 86 with all the promise in the world, this is our year, you know, to win it, and you have, you know, this phenom in Dwight Gooden, and obviously Straw doing what he's doing, and, you know, old man, quote-unquote, Davey Johnson, et cetera. You're in a pickle play between first and second in spring training and get hit in the eye with a baseball, shattered your glasses, and that's why Lenny Dykstra starts that season off in center field and not you. Then the platoon happened. Walk me through when you hit the ground after the glasses shatter. Was there a thought in your head, I'm in trouble here? Or did you know that it was a superficial thing and you'd be okay?
Well, first, it wasn't a superficial thing. That was a serious, it was a serious eye injury. And as far as that spring training, it was already predetermined that Lenny was going to be the starting center fielder.
Okay, I didn't know
that. Who that was.
Got it.
Yeah, that was didn't happen because I got hit. You know, that was not going to be the everyday center fielder. It was going to be center and left, wherever it needed me, and that kind of stuff. So that was already predetermined. So I want you to put that to rest. So that was not part of it. But when I got injured, playing baseball was the last thing on my mind. I was concerned about my eye. I didn't know they extended the damage until they told me after the surgery, you know, how bad it was. But playing baseball was not the thought process. I couldn't imagine myself going through life with one eye, you know, and that was my thinking at the time. So I just want people to understand that some things change your heart, sure. You know. And as much as I love baseball, I would have gladly given it up if it meant the difference between my eye and baseball.
No doubt. And obviously this Saturday is a big celebration at Citi Field for the 86 Mets.
40 years.
40 years. Let me ask you this, Mook. I know you to be a very religious man, a man of God, and I have great respect for that.
Yeah.
Which means you were in a very interesting pickle yourself when after you guys beat the Houston Astros in that 18 inning game, whatever it was, and that infamous flight back where the Met ownership wants to fine everybody at like $10,000, whatever it was, and Davey says, I got you covered, don't worry about it. You had to see some things on that plane that did not fit with your particular lifestyle. How did you handle that?
Well, you learn to, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. there are some things that you talk about, and there are some things that you take to your grave.
Hmm.
And though you may agree or disagree, there's some things that not be to be discussed because it serves no real purpose, you know, at this point. Let's say 40 years later, it doesn't serve a real purpose. But yes, I'm a Christian and I'm a minister, but I'm a human being as well. And I was a human being long before I became a Christian. So I understand celebrations and people letting their hair down. And I tell you what, it was a great, great plane, a great plane ride. And I am so glad we didn't have to pay for the plane.
Mookie, let me ask you, we're talking about the differences on that team, and obviously, you know, that clubhouse is infamous, 40 years, still celebrated. And part of the reasons, at least many people think, that this team has failed in some ways over the last couple of years has been team chemistry, and some guys shipped away, and the thought is that they didn't jive, they didn't get together. Can you speak to the chemistry of that team and then how important it is for, even if, you know, leaders on the team don't get along, because that's the thought now, that maybe Juan Soto and Lindor don't get along. How important is it for a group to figure it out despite the differences you might have, and how impactful can leaders be in that? And what did you guys do considering there were so many different type of, you know, personalities in that room?
Well, first of all, I don't think no team in history of any sport had as many personalities that we had in 86. I mean, we had everything from crazy to every dumb, stupid, crazy, you name it, we had it. But we had a common goal, and that was to be the best ball player, best team we could do. And, you know, you talk about chemistry. Everyone talks about it, but no one really wants to define it. Chemistry, simply, you can't look in the Webster Dictionary and define chemistry to a ball team. If you want to write an essay, okay, we go to the Webster Dictionary. But if you want to describe chemistry on any team, chemistry is simply players respecting the ability of the other player. That's all chemistry is. And when you respect the ability of the other player, you trust that player to do his job every day. That's what chemistry is. For better or for worse, you don't have to love him. You don't have to like him. You definitely don't have to sleep with him, but you got to work with him. And that's what chemistry is. Yeah. And when that chemistry is disrupted by personal feelings and all that kind of stuff, you're going to get chaos. It's what you're going to have. Now, people see how we performed on the field. they didn't see everything that went on in the clubhouse. No one, so we didn't always get along. We didn't always have parties, but we always played together, and we played for each other. That's what that's all about. Now, that does that translate to what's going on today? Well, look, when you have new players coming in every day, you have new management coming in every other year, how can you develop any kind of culture? Culture is not something that you buy. It's something that is established and developed over years.
Well,
and
look,
right now, that's where we're at.
It's always a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to seeing you on Saturdays. The Mets do celebrate 40 years since the championship in 86. You know how much I love you and respect you, and look forward to seeing you again soon, and my very, very best to your family. And it's always good to hear your voice, pal.
Man, thank you so much, man. I miss you guys, man. Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Mookie.
The great Mookie Wilson, everybody, from his home down in South Carolina. And it's amazing. One of the side effects of this lousy Mets season is that Saturday, it's not going to get lost in the shuffle, because I'm sure there's a lot of people going to go there because it's the last championship and an infamous team. And there have been 97 documentaries done on the 86 Mets.
There have been.
But
that's the problem.
It kind of sucks that, it's like, I really want to go to the ballpark? Can't we do this at Radio City or something?
I think it's partly that the Mets aren't very good right now and the season's over and we're talking about what players they're going to sell. But it's also, they keep having the same celebration every 5 years.
Yes.
Like that.
At least this makes sense. It's 40.
There's nothing wrong with it, and they should celebrate this team.
They got nothing else to celebrate.
That's the problem. The problem is they're the only celebration in town every 5 years. Right. Like, every Met fan has probably been to one of these already. It's not like, I got to go to the 40th.
Less special.
I was at the 35th. I was at the 30th.
It's like your high school reunion.
I was at the 25th.
Right?
I was at the 20th. Like, every 5 years they celebrate this team, and they should. They're worthy of celebrating. But it's, man, you'd like to have another one.
Be nice to have one.
Be nice to have one.
That we can celebrate 10 years from now as opposed to the 50th of this one. In any event, we'll get back to your calls as well on all the Giants stuff. We have an update on Malik Nabers as well and an update on the Jets and Robert Saleh talking smack. Lots cooking here. It's the Carton Show.